Jude. Jude chapter 2, verse 1. That's not true.
Bible study teacher.
The love of God is agape, divine love, total selfless love, self-giving. And it was a word that was coined specifically for the New Testament. The word agape, from what I've been able to determine, did not exist in the Greek language. Agapeo, as a verb, existed in the Greek language and was a common word. And it's the verb of love. In John 3:16, when it says, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, the word is agapeo. And it means that God gave importance, gave breath to, gave. It's not the word agape. So God so loved the world, the purpose of what he created the world for, the bride. It's the same as always, where the Father gives the bride to the Son. Everybody understand that? That love has as its manifestation mercy and grace. Now, it had to be mercy before grace, as we talked about yesterday. But in order to apprehend it, you have to apprehend the grace before you apprehend the mercy. The grace is that you are forgiven. No matter what it is that you've done, no matter what your mind tells you, you're forgiven. And that grace will permit you to apprehend God's mercy. Now, do I need to spend more time on that? Or did you understand it yesterday?
Well, I just got mixed up when you said grace is the fact that you're forgiven. I thought that was mercy.
Well, so I don't know. The point of it is that you can't have your guilt forgiven without understanding his mercy.
When I think of grace, I think of grace as God sort of goes like this and creates a bubble around you and makes you not subject to the fates. And like living in a state of grace, being in grace, is one in which you're in God's hand, not. That's what I think. I don't know if that's right or not.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's fine. And I don't want to make this a word game, but I want it to be so that you can apprehend it. From God's standpoint, because of his mercy, he gave his Son grace. From our perspective, we have to understand his mercy before his grace can be apprehended.
So,
So the requirement on our part is to understand or to
receive. To receive, to accept.
To say yes.
Because guilt must be done away with. Now, again, in reality, these are inseparable. This is just a device in which hopefully it can make it understandable so that you're not running around plagued with guilt. So that maybe by some mystery of God, you can finally love yourself, accept yourself, and then forget yourself so that the guilt doesn't keep you locked into the lower realms of life. Now, what I want to show you about this word agapeo, we've studied it before, where it says God so loved. Let's go to John 3.
What strikes me as important is that transaction of you either refusing, which a lot of people somehow do, or bowing down to it.
When I think of mercy, there's Angel's got a quote in a refrigerator from Madeline Lingle. It says, all the evil that man can think or do is no more than a live coal dropped in the ocean compared to God's mercy.
That's why the thing that we've said so often here is that, you know, these molten images that define your emotional response to situations when you just feel like you didn't have any control over it. Well, those molten images were formed in the fires of early emotion, sometimes extreme cruelty and fear, because you're this little kid and somebody's just either beating on you or telling you you're no good or whatever. And that just creates these incredible emotional responses. And so then you grow up and you can't control those emotional responses. There's only one fire hot enough to melt those idols, and that's mercy. But think of the things that in many ways when I see and hear about, even just here locally, I mean in our community, what parents say to children that just creates this intense fear. I mean, it's not so much here anymore, but it just, you know, I was unbelievably fortunate in that I never had that kind of experience where my parents or put that kind of fear in me. I think it's because I had the wolf, but that's probably another story.
Yeah,
you wouldn't have had to sick him.
The wolf knew.
Yeah.
In my screenplay at the end of the film, your life, we find out that the wolf never really existed.
Was it an invention?
Projection.
Was it a projection?
That it existed, but it never really did.
All right, John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. He that believeth on him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And this is the commandment, that light is come into the world, and men loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. Now the word, and men loved, is again the same word, agapeo. Right.
So
listen, huh?
This is the condemnation. You said this is the
condemnation. Yeah, I'm sorry. God so loved the world that he gave his Son, loved, agapeo, the verb, he so gave importance or gave breath to. Men do the same thing. They love the darkness. They give now, the darkness isn't like night, but it's the darkness in which it's really a word that means twilight, in which you can compare. And as long as you can find one other person that you can judge down, then you can feel all right with yourself. Or one other class of people, or one other situation, then you can feel all right with yourself because you have somebody to kick in your mind. So that's what it means. You love the darkness because your deeds are evil. Now, the evil, don't put your definition of evil on those deeds. Your deeds were about self-seeking, which is the definition of evil. That's all you're capable of doing is self-seeking. Your deeds were about self-realization. And all self-realization is the essence of sin because it denies the curse, therefore it denies that you are to be a vessel for the completed work of God, for the one of God, for the whole mystery of God, for Christ in you, the hope of glory. Do you understand? You know, somebody says, well, what about the good people? Well, there are none. When it benefits them to do good, they'll do good. When it benefits them to do evil, they'll do evil. And man has created societies so that the structure permits them to have the illusion that they're doing good. I just had to take a course in for our manager's license on the private investigative thing, and I had to take a course on ethics. And the idea of ethics, the way it's understood in society, is just the makeup or the covering so that you don't know and can't see your own evil. Well, I have an ethical belief about this. Well, that's fine, but ethics, the idea that man could have any ethics is an illusion. He can be ethical in comparison to, but besides the standing beside the law of God, there is no ethics in man because man is cursed, has fallen. So I've said so often, the only thing you can prove with the Bible, you can't prove science, you can't prove history, that's not in its intent. The only thing you can prove with this Bible, you can't even prove the existence of Jesus Christ with the Bible. The only thing you can prove with the Bible is the fallenness of mankind. The emptiness and futility of all human effort, especially those that are done in the name of God. Have you ever wondered why? I mean, 30-some years of articles written about us, there's never been a negative article? Didn't that sound strange? Because is that because we're good or nice people? No, it's because our view of the world is We are doing the same thing that the press is supposed to do. They are the fourth estate. Their job is to, and if it's the fourth estate, what are the other three?
I've always wondered that.
What are the?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I know where to look it up.
What church, government, something else?
Okay, that's your homework assignment. Somebody in here has to find out what are the other three with the if the press is the fourth estate, okay? But the fourth estate, the purpose of the press is to act as a watchdog. Everybody else complains, you know, Christians get all mad because they always have bad news. They don't have the good news. Well, they're not supposed to have the good news. Their job is to be the watchdog to expose. You know, everybody used to tell, well, Ole, you need to publicize the good works that some evangelists are doing. Well, that sounds good, but nobody will pay attention to it.
They're so busy trying to do that themselves.
So the point is, the reason that the press likes us and is are really there biased towards us is because we assist them in doing what they are called to do. Does that communicate?
So we don't really control the
news. Well, they think we do. But it's, I mean, for those of you who didn't hear, the New Yorker magazine is one of the best two or three magazines in terms of its quality of writing and respectability in the country. And we got a call yesterday. They're coming here. They're sending a reporter here to do, he's going to be here for, I guess, 8 or 9 days. They're doing a feature on Trinity. Well, that's an incredible deal. How did that happen?
Yeah, we don't even have anything to do with New York.
Yeah. Well, how did the Los Angeles Times do? We don't have anything to do with Los Angeles. But there's something about the way we live, the vow of poverty, and what we do that is attractive to them. Why? Because it's their own ego. It's what they do. They do it differently. They don't take vows of poverty.
They sort of do when you become a journalist.
You take sort of, said, yeah, he takes a vow of poverty, yeah.
Said, don't do that. Do something else.
But I want you to, that's why what we do, we always have to be at risk. I mean, we're a public foundation. Anybody, if somebody decided they wanted to come in and take us over, it'd be very easy.
Get all our holdings.
Well, I mean, it's. Can you? I mean, the idea. Still, as far as I know, we are still the only public foundation, religious foundation in America. That's kind of weird. Because we're always at risk. Every time we have a membership meeting, the board of directors can fire me anytime they want to. Then you, the members, can elect any board members that you want. And then we get, you know, we get the... Always controlling everything. Well, I don't control anything. I haven't seen a checkbook or signed it. Well, I guess I've signed a couple of checks, but I have no idea what our financial status is. Haven't for 2 or 3 years.
You're sort of like a groundhog now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes you come on out.
But the only time that I, you know, I hate to stick on this, but. I mean, it's a miracle to me that I'm able to get up and feel well enough to teach in the morning compared to what I was before. And if I don't have to do anything, I mean, I don't know if I... Probably nothing else I do. I mean, I answer some phone calls. And
the other Sunday, last Sunday, you called down at Seder to see what was for dinner.
Oh, I was hurting so bad I couldn't even breathe.
And I said, "This is the man that strikes fear in the hearts."
Okay, let's go to John 12. It's just a few pages to the right, John 12. You know where it is? Thank you, Ronnie. I knew you would.
It's not about you, Ronnie.
No, it is. It is about Ronnie.
And I turned right to you.
But I'm very proud of you. I don't care what anybody else says, Ronnie.
He's going to go with red today, by the way. Sticking at ethics are a perfect example of shared idolatry.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, it's saying that ethics, God is being ethical, is being God. We can all agree to that, so it's a good thing.
In fact, I use those words. I've said that the idea... That the fact that there is more fraud committed in the name of God in America than in any other method or type of fraud is an abomination, because if you're operating in the name of God, your ethics should be 1,000 times more pristine then I mean, it, you should cut off your hand rather than, or you should, you know, crawl across broken glass to keep your word. But I mean, all right, John 12. Remember, we're talking about this with the word love, the verb agapeo. Thus, in verse 28 or 38. No, we have to go to 37. But though he had done so many miracles before them, yet they believed not that the saying of Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled, which he spoke. Lord, who hath believed our report, and to whom hath the arm of the Lord been revealed? Therefore they could not believe, because that Isaiah said again, he hath blinded their eyes and hardened their hearts, that they should not see with their eyes, nor understand with their heart, and be converted, and I should heal them. These things said Isaiah when he saw his glory and spake of him. Nevertheless, among the chief rulers also many believed on him, but because of the Pharisees they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. For they loved, agapeo, the praise of men more than the praise of God. So men love darkness, men love their mother, men love their father, men love their wives. Again, as a verb. But God demands that thou shalt love the Lord thy God only with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. There isn't room to love anything else, but by loving him only, that's the manifestation of the revelation of Christ, and you will love the others. But, and you'll love in a way that you never even dreamed of. Not the puppy love crap of when you first meet a girl, or you know, the it's the love of a friend or the love of a family. All that dies, and Christ condemned it. You are born to love, but not after your understanding. It's not love by the word, by your definition of the word, because when you define that word, and again, there are at least five words in Greek that are all translated as love in English. And then there's the whether it's a noun or a verb. And so the point of all this is that the King James does it better than any other translation, but it's still, you need to rightly divide the word of truth. You need to cut up the sacrifice, if you will. So that you know, I mean, you know, if you run, to love just means to give breath to. So if you run around and you got, okay, I got this great idea, and here's what I'm going to do about it, and here's how it's going to be done. Well, what you're doing during that time period is you're loving that idea more than you love God. Because I don't believe it's possible, and this isn't scriptural, this is me. I don't believe you can love, agapeo, two things at the same time. Agape, the love of God, can love all at the same time. But I believe if you, and I'm not saying this is of God, I'm saying this is what I believe. And I believe that my experience and watching has proven it true, that you can't agapeo two things at the same time.
From a man cannot.
Yeah. You cannot give importance to two things at the same time. That's another. And the way the you can't. Go to Matthew 6. How to get off on all this again? What are you laughing at, Jim? Matthew 6, verse 22, I mean. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. But if thine eye be evil, actually it says if thine eye be double, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? So that's one way of looking at what I just said. And then here's another way of looking at it. No man can serve two masters. And I'm talking about at any given instant. And that's what this means. No man can serve two masters at any given instant. He will either hate the one and love the other, or else will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Mammon, remember, mammon is anything that you have confidence in. It's a Chaldean word. And it could be money, but it also could be that idea that you've just given birth to. And you can't love God in mammon. It could be the thing you just wrote. It could be the thing and that you, the person you just met. It could be, and you remember, you can't love agapeo, God, and mammon. If your eye is single, your whole body is full of light because that light is Christ. If your eye is double, then your whole body is full of darkness. Does everybody understand?
It's like the way we talk about marriage. The same thing. If two people are looking to God, then a relationship has a possibility. But if we're looking to each other, it's doomed. So the point is to see God in everything that you do. That's your one and only focus. As opposed to
yeah, but that is
God here at breakfast and then going about your business.
The point is to take no thought of, about, or for yourself at all.
That's the, because having double vision, it's saying I love God, but really I love me.
Yeah. Gary gets so mad at me when I do that to him, and yeah, and then.
What? I do too.
What were you doing? That's why you do it.
Why does that? Well, he made a statement. It wasn't right. Anyhow, we'll get back to the real Bible study tomorrow.
This was the fake one.
This was the fake one.
Yeah.
God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. Because of his mercy, he gave grace. Because of his mercy, grace appeared. You can't love. You can't give importance to two things at the same time. What this should do in you is cause repentance to be more and more pristine, more knife-edged. So that the moment you start thinking about yourself, it's just you just leave yourself behind again.
This is where the idea you talked about where you start to worship a problem. Same idea.
Right. You give breath to the problem.
You're sincerely concerned about something, and suddenly you can't be worshiping God and worshiping the problem, so you're either worshiping the problem.
Alrighty. Anybody else?
It's just like the monkey trap. Get your hand stuck in the door.
All right, take the big guy.